September sky, watching as clouds went by. We confessed everything to each other.
Hey everybody, welcome to Adventure Retired, the podcast where retired people share what they're doing in their retirement to help inspire you to live your best retired life. We are Kurt and Cindy Lilgedahl, your hosts, and today we're going to talk to
Joe. Joe did the Appalachian Trail, which when you're talking the bucket list, that's a huge one.
It sure is.
And yeah, I'm interested to hear about it.
Right. But hey, I'm drinking my coffee.
Yep. Sand and Sea coffee and tea. They're good things.
It's
delicious.
You get
10% off when you go to our website and click on it.
Yeah, I love it. But first, a life lesson from Kurt's book, Fix the Problem and Other Life Lessons from a Pragmatic Dad.
This one is change the filters around you. There's filters everywhere. You got them in your dryer. They're in your washing machine. They're in your dishwasher. A big one is your air conditioner. Of course, we all know about the gas or the oil and like that.
But there's that little one that's for the air that we found out in the glove compartment.
Right. You have a one for your air conditioner that's in the glove compartment of your car. They're everywhere. And you should change them because if you're running your air conditioner or something like that on a dirty filter, it just makes it work harder, which hurts the life of your appliance.
Yeah, I think probably when I was living by myself those years in Texas, I doubt I ever changed a filter.
Well, and that sadly, that's a lot of people when they have a car, you know, that's one of your biggest expenses. So yeah, change your filters around you.
All right.
All right, let's get on to the show. Today we're talking to Jeff Balch. Are you there, Jeff?
Yes, I am.
Hey, thanks for joining us. We sure appreciate it.
Where are you coming from?
I am in Pennsylvania, Montgomery County, about 20 miles from Philadelphia.
Okay.
That sounds good. We always ask two questions. What did you do for a living and how long have you been retired?
I was a police officer for 36 years, local police department. 26 of those I was on SWAT. That was basically my life for 26 years. And I retired actually on the trail. I officially retired May 31st, but I left for the trail March 12th.
Oh, okay.
So I took all of my accumulated vacation and personal time and everything else because I wanted to get started right around March and actually retired on the trail.
So, what a great retirement gift.
Yeah, you got paid to walk the Appalachian.
My present to myself.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
How
That's
wonderful.
Sweet. All right. So why did you want to do the AT?
It's kind of a long story. I worked patrol. I was on the street for most of my career. And at age 50, I decided to retire from SWAT and I was offered a desk job, as the administrative sergeant for our police department. Okay. And, doing payroll and scheduling and quartermaster duties and stuff like that. And I really, really disliked it.
Yeah.
So
for the most part, they allowed me to work 10-hour days. So I worked four 10-hour days. But within the first 3 hours, I was pretty much done with my work. I didn't really have a whole lot to do. So I had always dreamt about the Appalachian Trail, but that's when I started really doing a lot of my research and reading blogs and looking at equipment and stuff like that. So I had planned it. After 5 years as the administrative sergeant, the chief and I, who were friends, he said, "You really don't want to do this, do you?" And I said, "Absolutely not." So he let me go back out on the street as a patrol supervisor. And while I was out on the street, I ended up getting injured pretty bad.
Okay.
That was back in December of 2021. So I ended up having to have surgery March of 22. So I kind of went into a little bit of a depression there because I didn't want that to end my career.
Right.
Yeah.
But unfortunately that was it. So, the planning actually went hard and fast after that. So while I was recovering from my surgery is when I started doing, a lot of my shakedown hikes. Mostly trails in Pennsylvania. I looked for the most difficult trails in Pennsylvania and started doing my shakedown hikes and things like that. And then went back to the surgeon. I had no idea. I'd never been on workers' comp before. And I said, I don't know how this works. And he says, well, you tell me when you want to go back to work. And I said,
never.
March 9th. March 9th. And he said, why March 9th? And I told him the whole story. He said, okay. And he signed off on it and actually hit the trail March 12th, almost exactly a year after my surgery.
Wow. Okay. That must have been, I bet the all those little hikes that you're doing, that was probably very key to your recovery.
Yeah, I had shoulder surgery, so it didn't really affect my legs or anything like that, and I could certainly walk with a backpack.
Okay.
So that's, you know, it actually worked out pretty well. So when I was recovering from my surgery, I was actually doing some shakedown hikes and a lot of overnighters and, you know, 3-4 days out on the trail just to get used to my equipment and everything.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That helped a great deal.
Does the AT run close to where you live? So, I mean, I know you're doing other
absolutely
ones.
Not.
Okay.
No. About now, in fact, my daughter had come and picked me up when we were in the Palmerton area, Pennsylvania. My daughter had come to pick me up to take me home for a day. And that was about an hour and a half's drive for her one way.
Okay.
So, no, I'm not anywhere close to the Appalachian Trail.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And have you always been a hiker?
No. I would actually, my younger years, I used to do run marathons, a lot of road races, and then I transitioned into triathlon, and I did a lot of that. And then I started having, I did Ironman way back in 2006, and after that, I started having some fatigue issues. So, long story short, it turned out I have a heart condition.
Oh, shoot.
Wow.
And which made running a little bit difficult. So talking to my cardiologist, I said, hey, I can still walk. So I took up backpacking as a way to continue to stay physically fit. But I'm actually going to try to transition back into running and triathlon again.
Wow. Okay.
So see how it works out once I recover. So.
Well, you know, walking is such a great exercise and something we can all do as we age. And,
oh, absolutely.
You know, I love walking and I know Kurt does too. So yeah, but wow, running, I'm a runner too, or I was in my younger days. I'm not anymore, but I was on the treadmill this last week and just did a couple of little short runs, you know, in between my walking. And it's like, oh yeah, you're right. It's in your blood. You can't get rid of it. You got to do it.
I don't want any of that blood. Okay. Did you plan this with anybody else or are you figuring on going solo?
I did. I served in the military back in the early 80s, and we still all keep in contact. So about every couple of months, we have a Zoom meeting.
Oh, nice.
With all of our group. And they said, hey, what are you going to do when you retire? I said, I'm hiking the Appalachian Trail. And a friend of mine said, me too. So we planned it together.
Okay.
Fantastic.
We actually hadn't seen each other in 40 years.
Wow.
So, so we ended up, we fixed on a date and we ended up meeting in Georgia, Amicalla Lodge. And we picked up a third in the parking lot. We were both wearing 82nd Airborne hats and he walked over to us and we got into a conversation and he came with us. So we ended up with three at the start.
Oh, fun.
Wow.
And yep. All three of you make the whole way or?
No.
Okay.
Mitch, the guy I started with, his trail name was Renegade. He made it just past the Smokies and then he dropped out for personal reasons. We at that point in time, we actually had five of us. So we had met a young lady in Franklin, North Carolina. She had just retired from the military. She was 40 years old. She did 20 years in the Air Force.
Wow.
And she was hiking by herself and asked if she could hike with us. So that made, Mitch, Churro, me, and Beeps. So that was four of us.
Okay.
Which works out really nice, especially if you're splitting hotel rooms and stuff like that. And she didn't care hiking with guys. She,
right.
You know, did her time in the military and she didn't have any issues with hiking with three guys. And it helps getting rides too. You put her out on the street with her thumb out.
The good looking one. Yeah.
She gets us rides in the town.
Yeah.
And then later on down the road, we ended up hooking up with a fifth person who just retired from the military after 26 years.
Okay.
And his name was Treadhead. So we had a group of five at one point. That was our tramley. And we lost Renegade first. He dropped out in the Smokies. We lost Treadhead second. He dropped out right before Damascus. for family reasons. We lost the third, Chero. He dropped out for money issues in Damascus.
Okay.
And then Beeps and I started hiking together by ourselves. We ended up hooking up with another person at Woods Hole Hostel in Virginia. He was a firefighter from Long Island who was in the World Trade Center.
Oh, my.
He had been trapped in both collapses and going through some PTSD issues and hiking for an organization called Paws of War that provides service dogs to military and first responders.
Oh, wonderful.
And we noticed he was hiking by himself a lot. And we just asked him, hey, do you want to hike with us? And he was more than happy. So then it was back to three.
Okay.
So we all hiked together for a while. We hooked up with another lady. She was probably about 55 from Florida. Her name was Tater.
Okay. You mentioned these names, and I know on the AT, yeah, they have trail names. What was your trail name?
Early Bird.
Early Bird.
Yeah. I
do
got
that.
Know
day, why?
I got that day one, the first night out. Being a police officer for 30 plus years, we worked 12-hour shifts. So I either worked 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and I did that for a 28-day cycle, and then I would work 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. So 4:30 was my wake-up time.
Oh, yeah.
I would wake up at 4:30 in the morning, hit the treadmill, go out for a run, hit the gym, and I was in the office dressed and ready to go by 6:15, 6:30. Oh, so I was just naturally, I wake up early.
Yeah, you're an early bird.
the first morning I was up at 4:30, I packed up my gear and I'm standing there in the freezing cold in Georgia waiting for everybody else to wake up. So
nobody really likes that guy. Do you know that, Jeff, right?
Yeah.
No, oh, that's great. I didn't even realize that you guys, that was part of hiking the Appalachian is having these nicknames or having these trails.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Nobody really likes to use their real names. So
that is too fun.
You mentioned accommodations. What are the accommodations as you go through there? Like the most common, I mean, I'm sure.
Tenting, right?
Yeah. What are the accommodations you can use?
Well, personally, I like to stay out on the trail a little bit longer, anywhere between 4 to 7 days. So that requires a lot of food, but longer. But there's other people that like to go into hostels or hotels. You know, they'd be out on the trail for 2 or maybe 3 days and then get a shuttle into town. So I preferred staying in hotels.
Okay.
I don't like, I wasn't really into the group setting of staying in a bunkhouse with 15 other people.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but I stayed in plenty of hostels, stayed in plenty of motels, but tried to limit my 0 days, your days off where you're not actually hiking. So I didn't take that many zeros. It took a lot of Neros where you hike, you get shuttled into town at the end of the day, you do your laundry, you resupply, you take a shower, you sleep in a nice bed, and then the next day they shuttle you back out to the trail. So you're not actually missing a day of hiking.
Right. Right.
So we did our first 15 days with 2 Neros.
Okay.
So we hiked for 15 days straight. So, you know, you stay in hostels, hotels, and when you're out on the trail, obviously you're either in a tent or a shelter. And most people will hike from shelter to shelter or shelter to campsite that has water.
Okay.
That's a big thing. You're always looking for your water sources. If the weather was really bad, I'd stay in a shelter, but I tended to avoid shelters as much as I could.
How far usually is it in between like a day? Like how far do you usually hike a day?
Depends. We took the recommendation and we started off slow. So we would do anywhere between 8 and 10 miles a day, sometimes shorter for the first several weeks. And then your mileage starts to pick up and you're consistently doing anywhere between 10 to 15 18 miles a day.
Okay.
But, and my philosophy was start early, finish early. So if I'm hiking beyond 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, that's unusual for me.
Right.
Because I don't like setting up in the dark. And when you get to a shelter or a campsite earlier like that, you kind of have your choice of where you want to stay. And you'd have some people come strolling in like 8, 9 o'clock at night, and shelter's full, campsites are full. They're bitching because they can't find a place to stay. But right. Oh, start early, finish early.
Yeah, right. And
so, like when you guys are hiking to a shelter, I'm trying to mm-hmm. imagine what this looks like. You get to this shelter area, and I know from our friends that have done part of the hike, that is kind of like could be a lean-to type thing, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then how many campsites are usually around that area, or can many?
Depends on the shelter. Yeah. Some in Georgia early on, I think at one point it was a 12 person shelter, and they must have had 20 people stuffed in there.
Oh yeah.
And we counted the tents, and I believe there were like 15 to 20 tents.
Wow.
Around the shelter. So early on, it gets really, really crowded, but then it starts to thin out the further you go. Get up into the White Mountains. There's a lot of section hikers that love doing the White Mountains.
Okay.
And in the White Mountains, they have huts. And you generally have to make a reservation for a hut.
Okay.
And it was kind of hard getting into the huts because they were almost always booked. And they're expensive. They could be upwards of $150 a night.
Wow. Yeah, so, that does hurt the budget.
Yeah, but then they have camping areas usually around the huts. So it just depends where you're at. Sometimes you'd get to a shelter and it was only us, you know, two or three people.
Do you have to pay for that camping area around the shelter?
No, that's completely free.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
So did you see a lot of people on the trail?
Early on, yeah.
And you then, started top or the bottom?
We started in Georgia and
okay.
finished in Maine.
Okay, yep. So you went up. Now, I hear that top part, Maine up there, that gets a little tougher, doesn't it?
The first 20 miles in Maine are probably the hardest hiking of the entire trail.
Okay.
Wow. You can't move fast. If you're doing a mile an hour, you're actually doing pretty good.
And that's why? And then, why? What's yeah. going on?
Oh, well, rocks, boulders, mountain climbing. It's crazy climbing and descents, you know, with a pack on your back. You're just moving so slow. The famous Moosic Notch, it took us 2.5 hours to go a mile.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And you're climbing over boulders, under boulders. You know, it's ridiculous climbing. It's crazy climbing, but you know, muddle through it and you keep moving forward and eventually you get to your goal. But yeah, we were down to probably anywhere between 6 and 8 miles a day.
Wow.
Got up into Maine and New Hampshire and Maine.
But you could see the end in sight though.
Yeah. At that point, you're like, I just kind of want this to finish it.
And is that, that's point. Mostly uphill too. I mean, it's climbing up, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Actually, climbing up isn't the bad part. It's coming down. And with the rain that we had and the rocks just get so slick and you're falling and it's just it can get pretty crazy out there.
Oh, that sounds horrible.
The rest of the path, like when you're down south, is it like a walk? Like, you know, like I'm trying to envision that many people that have done this trail. Is the trail pretty marked? I mean, so you don't get lost?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I would be the one that would get lost.
it's very well marked with the white blazes. And two things that I'd have to say 90% of the people carried. They have an app for the phone called Far Out. It used to be called Gut Hook. And Far Out will actually track you on the trail, even if you're in airplane mode.
Okay.
So you can pull your phone out at any point and see where you are on the trail, how far away you are from your destination. Not hard. I mean, it's kind of hard to get lost when you have the Far Out app. And most people would use the Appalachian Trail Guide to plan their days.
Right.
So we may want to plan 3 or 4 days out. We'll use the guide to do that and say, okay, we're going to do this many miles this day. We're going to stay here. We're going to do this many miles. But planning more than 3 or 4 days out, that's pretty much it, because you can't plan too much further out because it's all depending upon the weather.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what's the weather going to be like?
And how was your weather most of the days?
Horrible. It was probably the wettest on record in New England. This raining all the time. I think the first 4 days in New Hampshire was just constant rain, high winds, low ceiling. So you can't really, there's no trail. It's just all rock.
Right.
So you're navigating by looking at the cairns, you know, the rock piles. They'll paint a white blaze on a rock. And we were actually climbing Mount Madison. It's a half mile up, half mile down. It took us over an hour and we actually got lost because it was so foggy. Well, the ceiling, it's clouds. You're hiking in the clouds.
Yeah.
And we actually got lost because we're like, there were three of us at the time. And it was like, guys, I don't think we're on the trail anymore. And everybody look at their far out. It's like, holy crap, we really diverted. And so we kind of got lost doing that. So it can get difficult with the weather, but sometimes you just have to hike through it. That's, you know,
what a mental game.
That's where it starts to get mental because at that point, when you're up in New Hampshire and Maine, you have your trail legs. You've just trained for the last 4 months.
Right.
To do this. And that's what I would tell myself. Hey, you've trained for 4 months to do this. It's just climb the mountain. And so it becomes a mental game at that point.
Yeah.
Just pushing yourself every single day, getting up, doing your routine and just getting out on the trail and start walking.
Yeah. I've done long distance biking where I went from Mexico to Canada. And you're right.
Oh, wow.
The first week you're getting in shape. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it's very mental, you know, because it's like, this is my job. I have to ride from point A to point B. But did you have any days where you woke up and you're like, you feel a pain in your knee or your hip or something, and you want to say, I can't go?
every day I had pain somewhere. There was actually one point in the trail I really wanted to quit, and it was the only point in the trail I wanted to quit.
Mm-hmm.
We were up in New York, and we were just getting these torrential rains. That's when we had all that flooding up in New England.
Oh, yeah.
There was a thru hiker who drowned up in Vermont.
Oh, wow.
You know, doing a water crossing, and we caught some torrential rain. I ended up getting a stomach virus for about 3 days and was just absolutely miserable. And we did a 19-mile day, which completely trashed. I was hiking with two other people at the time, and we were all trashed. And I thought, boy, this would be so simple. I could just get a shuttle to a car rental agency and drive home.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And we took a day off. We took a zero and, you know, sat there and rested and meditated and prayed. And
that's fine.
You know, took care of my wounds. And and the next day we got up and we all just kind of looked at each other and said, let's go. And we continued on. But that was my lowest point where I really, really wanted to quit. Just everything is just completely soaked for a week. You're out on the trail and it's just, you can't stay dry. You can't stay warm. Friends of ours were stuck up on Bear Mountain during the rains. They had to get evacuated off. They were 2 days ahead of us.
Oh, wow.
So it got really bad up there with the rains, and it just seemed like it rained all the time.
On those painful days, that's where a friend of mine says, you take your vitamin I, ibuprofen.
Every day. Every day was ibuprofen. Yeah,
no kidding.
I actually acquired a hernia back in Southern Virginia.
Oh, wow.
I had to go to the emergency room. I had such pain in my groin. And luckily, we were hiking with a woman who was a multi-year through hiker. So she was doing sections. And she was hiking with us up to Shenandoah. So her husband was supporting her with a van. So they were kind enough to run me to an emergency room. And they really couldn't find anything. They said, it's probably a pulled muscle. I said, okay, well, I could deal with a pulled muscle. You just eat a whole bunch of ibuprofen.
Right.
And it turned out it was a hernia. So I hiked with a hernia for about 1,500 miles, which I just had repaired on December 4th.
Okay, good.
I had surgery on December 4th. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that started to get painful after a while too. So.
Oh, wow.
But again, you hike through it, you have pain every day. And
when you're on the trail, Jeff, and you're going and you're picking up food, what was your favorite energy food, your go-to?
Favorite energy food. Oh yeah. I learned about hiker coffee.
Okay.
So I like a cup of coffee in the morning. So I would bring like instant coffee and stuff like that. And I learned hiker coffee is a Carnation instant breakfast packet, a hot chocolate packet, and two instant coffee packets.
Ooh, yeah.
So this gives you nutrients from the Carnation. It gives you calories, obviously, from the hot chocolate, and it gives you caffeine.
Okay.
So some people would actually drink it cold. So what you do is you take, because you when you buy Carnation instant breakfast, it usually comes in a box of like 10 packets.
Right, right.
Same thing with hot chocolate and same thing with instant coffee. So you kind of just mix everything into a big gallon Ziploc bag and five scoops in the morning,
right.
Drink that, eat a honey bun. And that was my normal breakfast.
Okay.
Lunchtime, I would just kind of snack, try to eat, anything with a lot of calories in it. And then in the evenings, dehydrated meals, couscous is a good one, instant rice, chicken packets, tuna packets.
Right.
Ramen bomb. My friend of mine was on the one guy, Chiro, that we met at Amicola, learned about the ramen bomb after a few weeks on
I've
the trail.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah. What's that?
Which is ramen and instant mashed potatoes.
Oh.
So instant mashed potatoes is a big favorite on the trail.
Carbohydrates.
Did you lose a lot of weight?
Over 60 pounds.
Wow.
No way.
Yep. I started at 242 and ended up in the low 170s.
Were your clothes falling off of you when you got up north?
Absolutely. I had to buy new clothes. Just stopped in a Walmart and, because my clothes would just literally be falling off me.
Wow.
So I had to actually buy a new pair of pants. And eventually at that point, I was hiking with shorts almost every day. So I bought a nice pair of Patagonia hiking shorts that I used almost exclusively. And then when it got really cold again, then I would go back to my hiking pants.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So you started this in March. When did you end? Or what were your starting ending dates?
March 12th is when I started, and I finished on September 20th. I summited Katahdin.
Okay.
That is just amazing. Yep. Okay, so gone that long. How did your family handle that?
Actually, my wife and my daughter and my dog met up with us at Harper's Ferry, which was about a three-hour drive for them, and I took a zero in Harper's Ferry to be with them, which is a big boost.
Well, yeah.
Harper's Ferry is kind of the psychological halfway point.
Okay.
And then my oldest daughter picked me up when I was in Palmerton and took me back home. And she said, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "Take a nap." So I ended up getting some new shoes and stuff like that, but basically just slept the whole day. And then she took me back the next day. And then my youngest daughter wanted to climb Katahdin with me.
Okay.
And she, texted me and she said, "Can I do it?" And I said, "No, it's too difficult." And I felt really bad. And I sent her a long text and I said, "It's dad coming out of me. It's really difficult. Watch some videos. If you want to do it, you can do it. Just know that it's going to be really hard." And she came up and she summited Katahdin with me. It took
Good
us over,
wow.
over 10 hours. Yeah.
Wow.
But she did it in super high winds and freezing cold weather.
Right.
Wow. So,
well, yep, she missed you. So that was great.
Yeah.
That's part of it. Yeah.
So in your backpack, what would be your go-to thing? If you were telling somebody who's going to walk the AT, besides a cell phone and the apps, what's the one thing every AT walker needs?
The one thing everybody needs, because a lot of people would go without stoves. I mean, a lot of people cold soak their food.
Wow.
I fell in love with, I don't use a sleeping bag. I use a quilt.
Okay.
So I had a 10-degree quilt from Enlightened Equipment, and that thing stayed with me the entire time.
I've never even
thing
heard of that.
Was, no. Yep. That was a lifesaver for me. A quilt is a sleeping bag without a zipper and a bottom.
Okay.
But it's not like we're looking at a quilt right now in our house that some ladies in our church made. Those are heavy. Is this one lightweight?
Oh, this is absolutely ultra light.
Oh, okay.
Ultra light. Yeah.
Cool.
So, my quilt, and I used a sleeping, an air mattress, a sleeping air mattress.
Yeah, that
and,
helps.
I went through 1, 2, 3 of those.
Okay.
But that's what keeps you warm, the cold coming up from the ground.
Yeah, that's what they say.
So the theory behind quilts versus sleeping bags is if the part of the sleeping bag you're sleeping on, the bottom of it, since your gown is compressed or your synthetic is compressed, it's not providing you any insulation.
Okay, yeah.
So why do you need it when what's actually keeping you warm is your pad?
Right.
So that's the theory behind quilts. Worked out well for me. So that was my go-to, was my quilt and my puffy jacket.
Yeah.
I had a Patagonia puffy jacket that I absolutely destroyed on the trail.
Right.
And I sent it back to Patagonia and they repaired it for free.
I'm going to say, I bet if you told them yep. your story, hey, this went all the way. What a great advertisement for
that. That is.
Yeah.
That really is
one of the things that they do. They would rather, repair what you have. And if it's so far gone they can't repair it, they'll recycle the materials and send you a coupon to get another jacket.
That is
mine was repairable.
Yeah.
So that's a very good company, Patagonia.
Yeah,
I can't rave, but never send your puffy home. So okay. I kept my puffy the entire time. And but as time goes on, try to tell people pack weight is everything. You really have to figure out ways to reduce your pack weight. And after about a month or two on the trail, I just started sending stuff home that I just wasn't using.
Right.
And it really helps a lot. And you learn that you don't need a lot on the trail.
Good boots, good socks, things like that. A little first aid kit or whatever you might need for blisters.
What did your pack weigh?
Initially, it weighed in at 38 pounds. That was with probably about 5 days worth of food. So without food and without water, probably under 30 pounds, probably like 28.
Okay.
Which isn't bad. I knew a guy that was hiking with a 45-pound pack.
Wow.
Did you have to take a lot of water?
No, not really. Water sources were pretty abundant for us. We didn't really have issues. Pennsylvania's always bad with water. But Trail Angels would leave the caches of water out for us.
Oh, cool.
And which really, really helped. There were some long sections like the climb out of Palmerton. There's a huge section there that's got absolutely no water whatsoever. So a lot of people were packing a lot of water out of Palmerton until their next stop. But
wow.
For the most part, water was fairly plentiful. We had so much rain. So the water sources didn't dry up. So water was pretty good. So I normally hiked with a smart water bottle, usually 1 liter. And then I had a smaller Gatorade bottle that I would mix my electrolytes in. So
okay.
I would drink electrolytes all day long.
Okay.
Whatever you can find in the dollar stores.
Yeah, no kidding. So,
a smart water bottle is one that has a filter on it?
It's a 1 liter bottle, but the filters are threaded the same as a lot of your popular water filters like Sawyer and Platypus have the same threading as a smart water bottle. So a lot of people will use that. They'll have one smart water bottle for dirty water and they'll filter it into a clean smart water bottle.
Okay.
Some people will drink it straight out of the bottle with the filter on it, drink it right through the filter.
Wow.
So I actually use something different. I used a BeFree water filter, which comes with a 2 liter bladder, and that would be in my front pouch. So whenever I had to water up somewhere, I would fill that up, fill up my water bottle, fill up my Gatorade bottle, and move on. So
okay.
that's what I used. And then I had a regular Platypus one that screws to the top of the water bottle as my backup.
Okay.
So I actually did use the backup a couple of times.
Yeah.
Because my primary clogged or I got a hole in the bladder the one time. So I actually used the backup water filter a couple of times.
Okay.
So I was glad I could.
Yeah.
And my first aid kit started out fairly big and ended up with some Band-Aids, Neosporin, and that was pretty much it at the end.
Right,
and some bleed stop.
Okay,
in case I had like a really, really bad gash or something.
Like super but that glue was the, or something.
Oh, I had super glue. I used that for my shoes.
Yeah.
and dental floss with a curved needle in case I had to sew something.
Wow.
I kind of dwindled down to barely nothing.
Did you see any animals on your trip?
Very few, to be honest with you. I was really, really hoping to see a moose up in Maine. And I stayed with a couple up in Maine. A friend of mine introduced me to them. They let me stay, and they took me out moose hunting just to try to see moose, and still didn't see moose. And I had one bear encounter that was in Massachusetts, actually.
Okay.
And, oh, yeah.
Yeah, nothing dangerous. I mean, I heard the skittering.
Right.
And I'm looking, and there's a little cub climbing a tree. Ooh. And I was like, oh, boy, where's mama?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I'm looking around, and I see two more little cubs climbing the tree. So I had a total of three.
Oh.
And then I saw mama about 50 yards off the trail just standing there looking at me.
Yeah.
So I just started yelling and clacking my sticks, and they skittered down from the tree and ran over to mom, and then she just casually walked away from me.
It took a while. Wow.
Yeah, definitely took a while.
Right.
But no real dangerous encounters with anything.
How about, did you ever end up in a shelter or a camp with people that you just didn't like for some reason?
It was rare.
Okay.
We ended up, a guy hooked up with us, and I certainly won't give his name out, but he was a real pain in the ass.
Okay.
And we were in Maryland at the time, and he had mentioned to us that he had gone through 14 hiking partners.
Ooh.
up to that point.
There's your red flag. And
he was a very selfish person, and he was very into himself, and everything had to be done for him. And we just, I was hiking with my friend Sleepwalker at the time, and we just planned a really, really long day. And we kind of outran him.
Okay.
So we got rid of him. And that was really the only bad encounter I had. I think 99.9% of the people on the trail are just really super, super great people.
I'm sure.
If you want to hike with them, that's great. If you don't want to hike with them, that's great. Everybody does their own thing. And and that was the best part of the trail, was just meeting all the people.
I'm sure. Hey, we're getting to the end here, Jeff, and we always finish with two questions. Your hell no, which is the worst part of your trip, and then your you betcha, the best part. So got a hell no?
Yeah, other than New York, I was up in the White Mountains, and we had hiked to a hut. I was hiking with a girl named Early Riser and a friend of hers, and we got to this hut. And they did have two bunks available, only two.
Okay.
So I ended up saying, you know what? He's our guest. Why don't you and Eric take the bunks? I'll camp out. And it was just a miserable night. The next morning, I woke up early, started hiking by myself, and it is 60-mile-an-hour winds. I mean, low ceiling. You can't see anything. It's raining. And I'm hiking along, and I just said to myself, what am I doing out here?
Yeah.
And it was just one of those moments like, oh my God, I'm going to die out here. It's just, it was that bad.
Nobody has a gun to my head or anything here.
I was behind a young lady that I'd seen on the trail quite often, and I knew she was a capable hiker, and I'm hiking along. And next thing I know, I almost fall over her. She's hiding behind a boulder in a fetal position. And I said, are you okay? And she said, I'm hypothermic and I'm scared. And I said, me too. Let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
And we pressed on. So that was one of those moments where it was like, it probably shouldn't have hiked that day, but it was just really bad.
But thank goodness you were there for her.
Yeah, to help her out.
Yeah.
Okay.
So how about your, you betcha, your, the best part?
The last step?
Probably.
Maybe?
The Rhone Mountain area, Rhone Highlands, I think is probably one of the most beautiful spots on the trail.
What state?
North Carolina, Tennessee area.
Okay.
Because the trail goes into North Carolina, into Tennessee, into North Carolina, into Tennessee. So it's back and forth, but they call it the Rhone, R-O-A-N, Rhone Highlands.
Okay.
And just absolutely gorgeous area. It reminds you of like Scotland, just wide open.
Right.
You can see the trail just going up and down these mountains, and it was just a beautiful, beautiful area.
Okay.
I would definitely go back there, and I love Shenandoah. Shenandoah is just a beautiful area too. New Hampshire, I wanted to love, but unfortunately I didn't have great weather, so I didn't get a lot of the views. But when we got up to the top of Mount Washington, the sun actually came out that day.
Okay.
And we just had these spectacular views of the White Mountains, just absolutely gorgeous. And I wish I could have seen more of that. I wish we had better weather, because I know I would have really enjoyed the White Mountains, just the views when you get to the tops of these things.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, that's what amazing. What an accomplishment.
Yeah.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I also want to thank you for your service for all the years of being a police officer.
For our audience, how old are you, Jeff?
I 61. I turned I was 60 when I, started the trail. Just turned 61 in November. So I retired at the age of 60.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you.
This was a big accomplishment. Yeah, we want to thank you, Jeff, for joining us. This is truly a huge bucket list, but you sound like you kicked it really well.
I appreciate the interview. I appreciate sharing. And anything else?
Yeah, I think you'll inspire a lot of people who are on I know we have friends that are going to do the walk over the Camino in Spain this year. Mm-hmm. And just there's so many beautiful places to hike in the United States alone, and it's just really cool to get out there and do it.
Yeah.
Oh, so just the final part. Everybody hikes for a reason. Some people hike for causes. I hiked because I really, as a police officer, that long, you tend to dislike people.
Okay.
Because everybody you encounter, you're either arresting them or it's probably the worst day of their life. So it's every day you're encountering, and you're always suspicious of people. And for me, just the people that I met on the trail gave me a new outlook on humanity.
Awesome.
That humanity isn't what I saw for the last 36 years. Humanity is actually what is out there on the trail, that most people are good.
Yeah, yes. There's a lot of good out there. There is.
And that really opened my eyes and made me look a little bit different at society than I have been able
that's
to look
wonderful.
At society.
That's wonderful.
Yeah,
that's a good way to start your retirement with that outlook.
Exactly.
Because there's so many wonderful adventures out there. Kurt and I just got back from a great adventure in Croatia biking, and there's so much fun. So I'm excited to hear about your retirement as you go on.
Well, by all means, if get out there and hike and planning on my next trip. I'm thinking of maybe the Pacific Crest Trail in 25.
There you go.
Two friends of mine are actually thinking about doing the Continental Divide Trail in 25. So starting my research with that. But I do have to spend some time with my wife.
Yes, you do.
That's number one.
36 years as a cop. And, I have to spend some time with my wife. And before I go off on another adventure like this, because she does not backpack. She hikes every day, but she does not backpack.
All right.
I don't blame her. Hey, thanks, Jeff. We really appreciate you joining us.
We're going to – do you have some pictures you can send us for the show notes?
I got them off the internet.
Oh, okay, great. All right.
I looked down there and saw a lot of AT pictures, so I'll be posting those on our website.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you can log into my Facebook page, friend me, log into my Facebook page.
I will.
I did like major accomplishments. I didn't do like a post every single day.
Yeah,
so
no, that's
quite
fine.
Quite a few pictures there. So.
Okay, great.
All right.
All right.
Thanks, Jeff.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that wraps up a great adventure.
Yeah, that's a great adventure.
Oh.
I mean, I think it's over like 2,000 miles or something. That to do that, the sense of accomplishment would just be phenomenal.
There's a lot of time to think and pray and meditate as you walk like that. And I bet that, his career, the way it was as a police officer, I bet he did a lot of reflection.
Yeah. I like that he used the hike to find the beauty in humanity.
Yeah. Oh, what a great, great guy.
Well, we want to thank y'all for joining us. It was a good one for us, and we hope you enjoyed listening to Jeff too. We want to we look for people to do podcasts.
Yeah.
If you got great adventures, if you got small adventures, we enjoy hearing what you're doing in your retirement. to get you out there, to inspire you
yeah,
just to live your retirement.
And to inspire other people, too.
Yeah, really and inspire great. Other people. You can reach us at our email, which is adventureretired@gmail.com, or our website, which is adventureretired.com. We
have a Facebook page.
We have the Facebook page. You can reach us through there. We're just always looking for guests, and we want to inspire you to live your best retired life. All right. Thanks for joining us. I love you, Cindy.
I love you more. And that's the kids loved you.